Radio Prague News.
The lineup of the proposed centre-right cabinet has been finalised. The Gay Initiative has ended its activities in the Czech Republic, saying its main objectives had been achieved, and the number of deaths on Czech roads has decreased sharply following the introduction of a strict new road law. The lineup of the proposed centre-right coalition government involving the Civic Democrats, the Christian Democrats and the Greens was finalised on Tuesday. Cyril Svoboda, former foreign minister, is to become minister without portfolio and chairman of the government's legislative council, while film director Helena Třeštíková is to take up the post of culture minister. Nominations to other ministerial posts remain as originally proposed. Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek is now expected to officially present the new government to the president. Once his government is appointed, Mr. Topolánek will have 30 days in which to ask the lower house for a vote of confidence. He said he would try to negotiate support from the opposition Social Democrats, either as a party or, if need be, from individual members. Social Democrat leader Jiří Paroubek has ruled out support for the centre-right coalition, saying that his party was still waiting for its chance to try and form a government. The Gay Initiative has ended its activities in the Czech Republic, saying its main objectives had been achieved. The Civic Association in Support of Gays and Lesbians was set up in 1990, shortly after the fall of communism, to fight prejudices against gays and lobby for equal rights and opportunities for gays and lesbians. The association's chairman, Jiří Hromada, said at his last news conference on Wednesday that he was happy to say that most of the association's goals had been achieved and that the public's attitude towards gays had changed radically for the better. The Czech Republic was the first post-communist state to pass a law enabling same-sex registered partnerships. The number of deaths on Czech roads has decreased sharply following the introduction of a strict new road law in July of last year. According to statistics, 951 people were killed in road accidents in 2006, which is the lowest figure in 16 years. This is ascribed to the new points system, which enables the police to confiscate driver's licenses for a certain number of transgressions, and the increased presence of traffic police on the roads in recent months. Taiwan-based digital, mobile and electronics manufacturing group BenQ says it will construct an LCD screen and monitor factory in the Czech Republic's second city, Brno. According to the internet news server Aktuálně.cz, the factory will have 8 assembly lines capable of producing around 500,000 LCD screens and 500,000 monitors a year. The new plant, employing around 700 people, should begin production in the third quarter of the year. And finally, a glance at the weather. The next few days are expected to be partly cloudy to overcast with scattered snow showers and daytime highs reaching 7 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková, that's the news.
You are tuned to Radio Prague and I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, the 2006 state budget posts an unexpectedly high deficit. We look at the implications. Czech ski resorts are hard hit by this year's mild winter. A painting by Hitler goes on sale in the Czech Republic. And in today's Czechs Today, a look at the life and work of Czech-born composer Jan Hammer, the man behind the Miami Vice theme. Stay with us. Although the Czech economy is booming, the government has surprisingly posted a large budget deficit of 93.7 million crowns, or roughly $4.5 billion, which could have dire implications for the country's future development. With the Czech Republic mired in political stalemate, this news could not have come at a worse time. Colleen O'Connor looks at the effect this may have on the country's economy.
$4.5 billion is a lot of money. That's how much the Czech government overspent last year, despite the fact that the country is enjoying record levels of economic growth. A fact that has many Czech economists pulling their hair out in frustration. Aleš Michal is a financial analyst with Raiffeisen Bank.
We have to blame the politics because today there is the highest economic growth in the history in the Czech Republic. And if you have the highest economic growth, it's not possible to have budget deficit growing.
A lot of this economic growth is down to massive foreign investment. And the early adoption of the euro is seen as crucial to keep this money flowing into the country. Unfortunately, the budget deficit is in danger of scuppering this objective. The EU has said that countries need to keep public spending below 3% in order to join the eurozone. As the Czech Republic is well over this limit, Aleš Michal thinks the country is now unlikely to meet its euro adoption target.
Today it seems to me that we are not able to adopt the euro before 2010. So we should expect joining the eurozone in 2012 or later. And the only reason is the public finance deficit and politics, nothing else.
Apart from a delay in joining the eurozone, Aleš Michal says the soaring budget deficit is also bad news for many ordinary Czechs.
So the deficit is growing and it pushes interest rates higher. So this is a very big problem for the Czech citizens because think about mortgages, about the loans, and it's bad for Czechs.
The main reason for this potentially disastrous situation is high social welfare spending and bad use of public funds. This hasn't been helped by the fact that many politicians have used money earmarked for vital public services to finance projects in their own constituencies. With Parliament locked in a stalemate and early elections a distinct possibility, it is hardly surprising that many politicians are busy tending to their own electoral patch rather than looking at the wider economic situation. Aleš Michal thinks that it is unlikely a solution to the deficit will be found until the uncertain political situation is resolved.
I expect yearly elections in the Czech Republic in 2 years, so I do not expect that this situation will improve before the yearly elections. We have wasted 2 years of rapid economic growth in the Czech Republic right now, and we still have a lot of tools to push the deficit below 3%. The only problem is the political willingness to do it, nothing else.
Moving on now to the weather. Like the rest of Central Europe, we're having an unusually warm winter here in the Czech Republic. Some towns and cities have even posted record temperatures, often reaching well above the 10 degrees Celsius mark. With snow scarce on the ground, travel agents say many Czechs who traditionally go to the mountains to ski are now buying holiday packages elsewhere. Naturally, many ski resorts are struggling to adapt to the situation. Dita Asiedu reports.
Ski resorts across the country agree it's been the worst season in 10 years. Although most hotels in the mountain areas remain fully booked, resorts are patiently waiting for a change in weather. Some have invested millions of crowns to enter the season with a new look and more modern ski lifts. In the north of the country, some have only just begun to open their slopes. Martin Rada is from the Mountain Rescue Service in the popular northern resort of Spindlerův Mlýn.
We had here very little snow, and up in mountains was very icy, very hard snow. So we had also a little bit different accidents like normally, because a lot of people was hiking over there, and then they had some troubles with knees and with broken legs. Now we are 1 week after Christmas time. Some of the lifts are open, but not all of the lifts. So still we have some tourists from the Europe, a lot of tourists from Germany, from Holland, and some of the tourists from Lithuania and from Russia.
It seems only those areas offering entertainment to make up for the lack of snow are surviving. Besides great slopes, Spindlerův Mlýn also has 2 aqua parks, a bowling center, and organizations offering other outdoor activities. Petra works at Yellow Point, which offers both ski courses and adrenaline sports to tourists.
We have had less clients on ski and more clients on our adrenaline activities. Because here in Spindlerův Mlýn, here was no snow, so we have made no snow pass, And this no snow pass include four activities. It means a Segway, 10 minutes away on Segway, bridging, it was one way on bridging, a giant swing, it was one swing in adventure park, and bungee trampoline in adventure park. All these cost 499 crowns.
That's around $23. But in other parts of the country, the situation seems less optimistic. Magda Vaňková heads the Sokol Sports Club operating the ski resort in Lukan nad Jihlavou in the Vysočina region in the southeast of the country. Last winter, the resort enjoyed four full months of glory from early December until March.
Tuto sezonu jsme s velkou radostí spustili vlek.
This season, after very little snow, we ceremonially opened the ski lift on Friday, December the 29th. It remained in full operation the following weekend. But at noon on January the 1st, we sadly had to close down the ski lift again. In resorts such as this one in the Vysočina region, the most lucrative time of the season is the Christmas period. That's when people and schools go on holiday for 2 weeks. So because the ski lift was closed, we've lost half our winter earnings.
V podstatě dneska můžeme říct, že polovina tržeb je nenávratně pryč.
With warm weather predicted all through January, it looks like the Czech Republic's traditional ski resorts are in for a very tough winter.
That report by Dieter Asiedu, and I must say that although I sympathise with the country's ski resorts, there are many of us out here who are cheering. May the mild weather hold for as long as possible. Years before becoming one of the worst mass murderers of all time, Adolf Hitler struggled to make ends meet as an artist. Paradoxically, while the exact whereabouts of the German dictator's remains are uncertain, there is a busy trade today in the paintings he made in the early 1900s, which nobody was interested in buying at the time. Recently, a watercolour by Adolf Hitler went on the auction block on a Czech website. Ilya Maritz has more.
The picture seems to depict a farmer in a cap and shirt sleeves tending to a small ground fire with a stick. It was painted in watercolour, mostly in shades of brown and tan. In the lower right-hand side of the painting, the initials A.H. Not necessarily proof positive that the painting was made by Adolf Hitler, says the director general of the National Gallery in Prague, Milan Knižák.
It looks completely different technique as Hitler used, as some kind of more free way of painting. Hitler was more accurate and used his brush differently. It does not look like Hitler's painting, but maybe it is, because maybe he painted when he was very young.
The only way to prove the painting's authenticity, says Knižák, would be to get an endorsement from an appraiser, something the anonymous seller has not done. The unnamed painting is on offer for 100,000 crowns, or about $5,000, at an online auction site. In a statement given to the newspaper Mladá Fronta Dnes, the anonymous seller explained that he had inherited the painting from his grandfather, who co-owned an auction house during the First Czechoslovak Republic. All I want to do, he said, is sell one watercolor in its original frame. Some observers see the matter as a bit more complicated than that. Profiting from the works of a mass murderer is ethically dubious, says František Banaj, chairman of the Jewish community in Prague.
Mně se to samozřejmě nelíbí, nicméně otázka etiky je...
Of course I'm not happy about it. The ethical question is complicated, and there is no absolute general rule. I would say it shouldn't serve any kind of propaganda purposes. And you have to wonder about someone who fetishizes or collects these kind of things.
Milan Knižák says the matter should not be too troubling, because Hitler's work just wasn't much good anyway.
It's not art at all. It's a very naive, very childlike, very boring aquarium painting. I mean, I'm not speaking about this painting, I'm speaking about all the paintings by Hitler. It's Hitler's painting, it's not a piece of art. It's a kind of souvenir, like pants of Napoleon or guitar of John Lennon.
Nevertheless, there is a lively international market for Hitler memorabilia. Last autumn, another non-authenticated Hitler watercolor sold for more than 10,000 British pounds, or a little over $20,000. The auction on the Czech-owned painting closes in 2 weeks' time.
The Czech Cultural Center Houston has begun selling a new Czech family cookbook titled Cooking with the Klimas. And if you're looking for inspiration in the kitchen, this dual language book might be what you've been looking for. Written by a retired Czech-American physician with help from her husband and daughter, it was more than 20 years in the making. The result is a 500-page tome, chock full of home recipes. Jan Vellinger has the story.
Dr. Marcela Klima is a retired Czech-Texan physician who lives in Houston, but never lost touch with her home roots. For more than 20 years, she gathered special home recipes, including traditional much-loved dishes, like dumplings and Wiener Schnitzel, after she, her husband, and their 5-year-old daughter left Czechoslovakia in 1968. Only recently, the Klimas published all the recipes in a single book. I spoke with Marcela Klima on the line to her home in Texas, and she described how she got the idea when her daughter was little. She wanted special family recipes to always stay with her.
I started long, long ago, I would say 25, 30 years ago, just to collect family recipes for my daughter. And then when she grew up a little bit, and my husband, of course, also interested in cooking, they persuaded me to make it into a cookbook. Because I was working as a pathologist, I got to the cookbook, I would say, once a year. But when I retired, I pulled out all my notes and started to put it together.
Gathering her notes and eventually writing the cookbook meant dividing the recipes along traditional lines. Cooking with the Klimas lists traditional categories like entrees, soups, main courses, and desserts. But Mrs. Klima told me that she and her family decided to include anecdotes together with particular dishes. She told me a very funny story about escargot she used to make back in Czechoslovakia. Because those were next to impossible to get in the 1960s in Czechoslovakia, Mrs. Klima learned to mask pieces of kidneys as snails, and most guests were none the wiser. After the Klimas came to America, they were finally able to try the real thing.
Suddenly, there were snails available, so I said, this year you will have the real original recipe. And everybody around the table told me, next time make it of the kidneys again, because the snails were sort of bland. They did not have the pungent taste.
Since the book is called Cooking with the Klimas, I also asked her if she and her husband actually cooked together. Her reply, when in the kitchen, they had learned to stay out of each other's way.
We started to specialize over the years, naturally, in certain dishes. My husband is a very good baker, especially if it's supposed to be some fancy cake. That's his job. And, of course, other things like goulash. He thinks that nobody makes a better goulash than he, and just likes to brag that his dumplings are the best.
Dumplings, meatloaf, beef and cabbages, and much more. You can most certainly find everything you've ever wanted to try in Czech cuisine in Mrs. Klima's book. If you want to learn more, you can contact the Czech Cultural Center Houston at their website, www.czechcenter.com.
A reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, coming your way from the Czech capital here in Central Europe. In today's Czechs Today, you'll get another chance to meet a man who's made his mark in the world. Colleen O'Connor introduces Czech-born composer Jan Hammer.
The sound of Crockett's theme from the popular 1980s TV series Miami Vice, which was a worldwide hit for Czech-born composer Jan Hammer. Crockett's theme is just one of many highlights in Mr. Hammer's glittering musical career, which has spanned many genres and seen him sell several million records. Born in Prague in 1948, Jan Hammer's family background meant that music was practically destined to be his calling in life.
Smutná se věčně střídá s veselou. A život člověkem si hrává. Najednou...
Jan Hammer's mother, Vlasta Pruchová, the so-called First Lady of Czech Jazz, singing a song co-written by her husband, Jan Hammer Sr. Coming from such an illustrious musical background, their son, Jan Hammer Jr., says it was almost inevitable that he would embark on a musical career.
Well, obviously, you know, growing up in a family like that, there was barely anything I could, you know, else I could do. Even though I almost became a doctor, which is what my father was as well, in addition to being a musician and a composer. But by the time I was about 16 years old, my work in the music field has gotten, you know, so good, I guess, or so rewarding, and I was able to support myself pretty much, that I decided that that was going to be my career. Pojď a hraj si s ozvěnou a zpívej to, co já. Na, 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 na,
na, na, na, na, na, na. The signature tune from Czechoslovak film Šilně smutná princezna, or The Terribly Sad Princess. The music for this movie was written by Jan Hammer when he was not yet 20 years of age, and both the film and soundtrack have become something of a cult classic for Czech audiences, on a par with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory or The Wizard of Oz in the English-speaking world. It is hardly surprising that Jan Hammer had become a national success story in his native Czechoslovakia at such a young age. He began studying the piano when he was just 4 and was part of a touring and recording jazz ensemble by the time he was 14. Despite such a dramatic rise to prominence in his own country, however, Jan Hammer was keen to continue developing as a musician. After winning a scholarship to Boston's Berklee School of Music in 1968, he took the decision to remain in the US after Soviet troops occupied Czechoslovakia in the same year.
I knew that sooner or later I would end up over here, I mean over here being the United States, simply because, you know, when you reach a certain level in music, you have to sort of join your peers. And I felt that the only way I was going to get forward or, you know, really get fulfilled and manage to what I was able of was to be here and actually play with musicians that only lived here. You just have to join what they call, I guess, the big professional league. And that's how it happened. You know, there was no question in my mind about staying here. I'm sure that it helped me make my decision quicker with being, you know, the Soviet invasion in 1968. Then it was sort of inevitable. But I was going to end up here anyway, sooner or later. I get misty just holding your
hand. It was well-known jazz singer Sarah Vaughan who gave Jan Hammer his first major break in the United States when she hired him as a keyboardist and conductor for a year-long tour. Shortly after this engagement ended, Jan Hammer began collaborating with jazz guitarist John McLaughlin and drummer Billy Cobham. The trio were to eventually form the Mahavishnu Orchestra, a legendary combo who were to end up rewriting musical history. The Mahavishnu Orchestra are largely credited as being one of the founders of what is now known as fusion music, a combination of jazz and rock which today has millions of fans all over the world. Jan Hammer says it was obvious from the outset that himself, Cobham and McLaughlin were creating something special.
Well, what happened was we really, while we got together first time and started rehearsing, we realized that we were basically coming up with something something quite new and like nothing that's gone before. It was a pretty seismic moment for us, and we knew that something was happening. That, you know, it's hard to describe, but it wasn't something that you know, we decided. It was just a combustible combination of people that came together at the right time, and really we changed things around.
By the time they disbanded, the Mahavishnu Orchestra had sold more than 2 million albums, and her work is still considered by many to be the blueprint for fusion music to this day. After the Mahavishnu Orchestra went their separate ways, Jan Hammer's career continued to blossom. He released his first solo album in 1975, and he also collaborated with renowned musicians such as Jeff Beck and Mick Jagger. Jan Hammer's success abroad, however, came at a price. Like many people who emigrated from Eastern Bloc countries in the 1960s and 70s, his decision to leave Czechoslovakia had an adverse impact on the family he'd left behind.
I do remember having a hard time, you know, and worrying about what's going to happen to my family, because obviously there were difficulties that the regime put in front of them simply because I ran away and I, you know, I didn't return. So they were sort of punished, especially my father. You know, he was not allowed to travel in his scientific work, you know, where he should be, you know, he should have been free to travel everywhere, and, you know, they wouldn't let him out. And things like that really sort of, you know, weighed heavily on me. But the life here was very nice, and I never complained.
Jan Hammer's output continued to be prolific in the 1980s, a decade in which he began to concentrate on composing soundtracks for television and film. His first major breakthrough in this field came when he was asked to write the score for the Miami Vice TV series. After he had finished writing Crockett's theme, the signature tune for the series, Jan Hammer instantly knew that he had created something extraordinary.
I remember when I first wrote the melody or the piece of music, I had a feeling that it would be widely accepted. It had a certain universal feel to it, and I knew that it could be a big hit if it was given a chance. And fortunately, it happened, and it was, you know, it was a huge, huge hit.
Crockett's theme won 2 Grammy Awards and is still the only instrumental to top the American Billboard chart. The Miami Vice soundtrack album itself went on to sell 11 million copies worldwide. Since the Miami Vice series, Jan Hammer has continued to enjoy a hugely successful career. Besides further platinum-selling film soundtracks, he also produces music for advertisements, computer games, and television series. Following the fall of communism in 1989, his music for television actually gave him the chance to work once again in the Czech milieu after a gap of nearly 30 years. The theme tune from a flagship current affairs program on TV Nova, the Czech Republic's first commercial television station after the fall of communism. This jingle was just one of dozens written by Jan Hammer for the station. In a small way, this project has helped him re-establish some links with his homeland after many years of exile.
From the beginning of TV Nova in 94, for, I don't know, maybe 8 years or so, I was doing most of their music for all their programs and things. So that way I was very much connected with Prague. One thing that I noticed and I really enjoyed in a couple of my visits when I was in Prague, that I could walk down the street and it was summertime and the windows were open and I would hear my music coming out of all the open windows. That was an incredible feeling. You cannot imagine what it's like.
Well, and that edition of Czechs Today brings us to the end of today's program. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.